Good afternoon, everyone. That was slightly better. You know, I was going to, I was that one of them. I was like, woo, yeah. Who is pumped to talk about assessments used in educator evaluation? Okay. If you're not, you're in the wrong place. Right. We're so thankful for you joining us today. My name is Stephen Sneed, Supervisor of Curriculum and Assessment at Oakland Schools.
My name is Brian Lloyd. I'm an educator, education research consultant working for the Michigan Department of Ed.
We put this bit.ly link on the slide deck for those who like to follow along, but I recognize that the internet is not necessarily the smoothest thing going on, but this slide deck is in the conference material site, so you will be able to access this. And it's pretty neat because it has a number of helpful links to resources that can help you in your quest to improve your assessment environment for the purposes of educator evaluation. Okay? All right, let's get started. So, what do we hope to accomplish in 1 hour and 15 minutes? We can do this, team. We're going to reconnect with our understanding of the ed eval legislation and in full transparency, our current understanding of the educator evaluation legislation as it is hopefully not changing. We're going to raise awareness of some guiding principles that should guide your work. And so for parts of these activities, it's going to be fair warning, we are going to ask you to use your cell phone. So hopefully your cell phone can get some signal to be able to interact with an online survey polling device we want to use with you. We're going to deepen your awareness of some MDE recommended models, and you are going to tinker with a tool that can help you determine local assessments you might use for educator evaluation. We're going to show you some model practices of two districts that have done a lot of work on this, and provide you an opportunity to reflect on some takeaways. Like after you've seen this stuff, had some conversation, what are you going to take back to the ranch when you leave here? So that's what we hope to accomplish today.
So a little bit about So a little bit about the educator evaluation legislation and what it says about measurement of student growth within educator evaluations. So we do consistently find that there is more flexibility available to districts than most people have perceptions about. That's a double-edged sword. The good news is you have more choices about what you can do with measurement of student growth than maybe you would have anticipated. On the other hand, you have to make more choices about how to measure student growth. So within the legislation, there is a requirement for this school year, 2019-20, to include student growth and assessment as 40% of the summative evaluation. Then there's another stipulation that for tested grades and subjects, half of this 40% is to be determined through state assessment student growth, and the other half from LEA selected student growth. So a good natural next question would be, what does the MDE recommend or interpret it to be a tested grade and subject, right? Because we give MSTEP in third grade. What state assessment student growth do we have available to us in third grade? We don't have any state assessment student growth available. Because at third grade is the first time we ever give state assessment. And in order to measure student growth, you need two data points, right? What is the change in scores from period one to period two? We only have one period. Right, so we don't have any state student growth available to us in third grade. We have ELA, where we have math and science, right? But there's 3 years that occur between data points. That means you'd have the best teacher in the entire world in seventh grade, worst teacher in the entire world in sixth grade, and you have one score to define the success criteria for both of those teachers. We'd be opening up schools to justifiable litigation across the state for using that data. and we give a course, say, assessment 11th grade. And now we're talking about 4 years between data points, right? Again, there's no way to attribute the impact of instruction to teachers given multiple years. So the MDE has recommended that interpretation be grades 4 through 8 in ELA and math. And that's the recommendation for the 1920 school year. Now, what if you are not a teacher of record? So basically, everybody else, or 78% to 80% of teachers across the state, right, who would be not be a teacher of ELA math. Well, you're still required to use student growth. It's just you don't have any state assessment student growth that's attributable to your instruction, right? So it would be, your 40% would be determined through LEA selected, assessments that are selected by your LEA to determine your success criteria, the impact of your instruction. So teacher of grade record grades 4 through 8 in ELA and math, everybody else, 40%. Now, there isn't a single teacher in the state who would have their student growth portion determined only by MSTEP, right? Because it says must be 50%. That means the other half must be another assessment. The legislation also does say requires that multiple measures be used, right? Because hey, everybody in the Michigan State Testing Conference knows you never make a high-stakes decision using one assessment, right? That's just good practice. Everybody knows that. So multiple measures must be used, and that is also the case with LEA-selected student assessment. So, you know, one thing that we're tasked with, and we're going to be talking about for the next hour and 5 minutes probably now, is, okay, well, what assessments do you use? Right, the criteria that we've set out for measurement of student growth with state assessment is hard, but compared to the thousands upon thousands of assessments that could be that you could use to determine this, that's really complex, right? And so there isn't a one sentence answer to this, but we're going to hopefully provide you some good ideas throughout the course of the next hour or so for how to measure student growth. Now, it also does require 3 years of student growth data as well. That's another important point to make. But we have a FAQ where we have this information located, the legislation is also available. For those who have this PowerPoint as an electronic version, you can get to the legislation. MCL 380-1249, for those who really love numbers.
I'm glad that you know that, Brian.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I do know that in my sleep. I mentioned before, the use of 3 years within that legislation, the use of 3 years is required. Now, there's flexibility in how to combine multiple years, especially for the LEA assessment student growth. There is research out there that says when you're using, whether it's value-added models, whether you're using student growth percentiles, for state assessment student growth data, the psychometric properties, the validity of the scores are much better when you combine multiple years worth of student growth data. There isn't quite as much on when you use local assessment data for determining ratings for educator evaluation, but the law says 3 years of student growth data, so that's something you do want to be to consider. So districts should develop policies to help account for what's within the legislation, right? We've consistently find that administrators are surprised by the amount of flexibility they do have to implement ed-eval practices that make sense to the educator. So people say, hey, Brian, we're doing this. What do you think? Is this something that'll be good? And I say, does it make sense to you? Yes. Does it make sense to your teachers? And if the answer to that question will go a long way, right? Because it we should be hopefully following the rule of common sense. Does this measure impact of your teacher's instruction? That's hopefully something to be considered. But continuous improvement has got to be at the forefront of, is this going to improve my teacher's practice? That's the yes-no question of, is this going to be compliant with MDE guidance? Is this going to be consistent with how MDE interprets the law and supports districts? Is this going to improve our teachers' practices? And if yes, then we're going to support the heck out of it. So just a little update. We've been talking with a lot of people for years about this legislation. And I think it's also important to know, I said this at the, if for those who were at the last student growth session right before lunch, it's important to know, here's MDE, here's the legislators, right? You would be surprised how many people don't even read my emails. And so we can advocate for and we can ask for different legislation, but we have routes of advocacy. You have routes of advocacy. Advocacy. There are some times when one speaker is listened to and the other one isn't. So we don't. The process isn't. We tell legislators what to do and they do it. That's just not how it works. But we've received a lot of feedback from a lot of people, and we're advocating for two changes in state law that would permanently maintain the portion of student growth at 25%. So, right, again, this year we're increasing from 25% to 40%, right? That's part of legislation. We're advocating for keeping it at 25% permanently, not just kicking down the can for yet another year, but keeping it at 25% moving forward and eliminating the requirement for the use of student growth from state assessment. Because we preach from the pulpit continuous improvement. This state assessment data doesn't come out until the year after. Right, we get the results back in August. The ratings are due in rep in June. So that means all that state assessment data is a year old. If we're going to continue preach from that pulpit of, hey, this has got to be actionable, usable data, the use of a data that's a year old is problematic, and as well as some other aspects of state assessment measure using state assessment to measure student growth in Nataval as well. But we only have an hour, so. Okay, so what I'd like us to do now is whether you're on your phone or however you have access to the internet right now. I know my laptop wasn't working earlier. If you could go to sli.do, and we have a question that's posted a poll right now. If you don't enter MSTCSG2, just enter in the event code MSTC. SG. If you were at the last session, the 2 is probably going to pop up automatically, so just be aware of that. Just MSTCSG in the event code when you go to sli.do. And I'd like to ask you, what guiding principles should drive your educator evaluation? What are you basing your practices on? What are you attempting to accomplish with your educator evaluations? What's your reasons why behind the policies and practices that you currently have in place to measure student growth?
So we can get away.
So this is from the bottom.
So after a few moments, I'm just going to ask you to talk about what you see and what you notice with the shoulder partner. So we'll do that in. Ooh, Lordy, about 2 more minutes to allow everybody to get in. Does anyone need the link and code anymore? Okay. Okay, seeing most people aren't looking at their lap at this time, if you could find a shoulder partner, someone who's seated around you, to talk about what you see. What resonates most with you based on what you see here on the screen or on what you placed in the Slido? And then I'm going to ask for 3 friends to share out what was lifted in your conversation. Okay, so shoulder partner to talk about deeply what you see here or what you listed. And I'm going to ask 3 people to share. What questions do you have? Awesome. Please begin. Again, yeah, for a second one. Yep. Is that the takeaways?
Yeah, you post and then like.
Then like.
This is a polling.
Just polling?
Yeah.
Okay.
The other one I think is a
pretty
I'm going to be like eyeing the two of you. So do I have any volunteers? So hearing the law, I am looking for, first, if you could bring your conversation to a close. If you could bring your conversation to a close, appreciate that. And I am looking for three friends to share what was lifted up in their conversation. I am an old high school teacher. I will kill you with wait time. Again, looking for three friends to share what was lifted up in the conversation.
We were talking in ours about having instructional leadership versus managerial leadership to really lead teachers to be reflective and become better at what they do versus just using a program, you know what they are, to give type in things about someone and not have face-to-face conversations.
Thank you. I'm looking for two more friends. See, there we go. It always works. It's science, y'all.
We talked about making sure that at the beginning of the year there's clear expectations set so that teachers have a really good idea of exactly what it is you're looking for and, you know, a path to get there.
Thank you. And Mitch.
So my new friend and I, we talked about, just ditto to what was said before, expectations. We mentioned relationships, rigor, relevance, and setting that expectation for what the look-fors are. And then we also talked about that in service of helping teachers to grow professionally. And then the piece that I added that we talked about is just transparency. So how do you come to that final score?
I'm hearing some buzzwords, transparency, growth. I particularly like your comment, like being clear on the expectations and the way to get there, right? So thinking about some of the assessments that you might use, do the assessments help you do that? Do they help you guide what comes next in a student's learning? Or is it an assessment product that just calls balls and strikes and you have no idea how to improve your swing, right? Especially when you don't get your data to August. Or, lovingly, I love all my friends, I love all my vendor friends, or are there reports that you get that you can't understand, right? I'm not making eye contact with anyone, right? I'm being very specific, right?
Target reading or writing, that's what you get back. When you get back from the state, the kid does poorly in reading. That's the target and claim, that's it, no information. Or just writing?
Well, do better, duh, right? So some guiding principles. We want evaluations to be rigorous. I mean, the public has a right to expect quality teaching, period, right? They have that right as we are taxpayer funded. So we want that to be rigorous, but we also want that to be transparent. If teachers and even if principals can't understand the systems, well, I don't know, just someone gives me a data sheet of numbers. That might be some of you who give those numbers. If people don't understand how those scores are derived, we're not going to get to that true sense of the evaluation being effective. And, of course, that are fair. We want to be fair because in some places, yeah, some high-stakes decisions are going to rest on whether someone is highly effective or effective. I once was, in my life before an ISD, an association president. And part of the sticking point in my membership was actually the difference between highly effective and effective. That caused a huge fight in my membership. So we want to be fair in how we come to those ratings using using assessment. Providing actionable feedback of teacher practice to improve student outcomes. The actionable feedback. What comes next in my students' learning? And what can I do as a teacher to help promote that learning? The assessment tools and systems should give you an easily to understand, interpret pathway forward, obviously mixed with professional judgment and teacher expertise, but the system has to give me some information to be able to do that. Something that's aligned to the definition of success for students, teachers, and administrators. We want some alignment across our system to inform professional learning plans, right? Thinking about how many of you are at the district level, you are a district leader, and raise your hand if you are at a school level leader. Awesome. So definitely one thing that I encourage is people to use that assessment data to inform what might be some professional learning opportunities to help your staff grow in some areas of practice that you want to see. And how do you see your whole year of DPPD as not just isolated incidents of, well, today we'll work on this, and tomorrow we'll work on this, and in November we'll work on this, but actually an arc, a story arc of professional learning where they're going to come out stronger in that area of practice over the course of a year or several years. And, of course, to facilitate a continuous process of improvement for educators where we're not, you know, one time, yep, we did that workshop on capturing kids' hearts. We did it. They came in. We captured their hearts. All right, on to the next thing. No, we got to be continuously reflecting on practice, and our assessment system, our local assessment system, has to give us the information to be able to do that. I think Jim Pellegrino spoke earlier today in any assessment vendor asking tough questions. And I'll often say to people, the assessment vendors or any vendor, doesn't matter, assessment or student information system, they're not paying you. You're paying them. You're the paying customer. And these are good people. I know that they're the representatives. They want to provide you the products and services you need to support kiddos. Work with them, advocate them. Don't bully them, but advocate strongly for what you need in your system. So let's take a look. Oh, yes. Did you have a question? Oh, let's take a look at some examples in practice. And these are some things that I've seen around the county. Let me go back. All right, let's have teachers individually create their own assessments and show results to their evaluator. Is that rigorous, transparent, or fair? Just have a quick shoulder conversation with a partner. You see that's an idea that's popped up in your district. You want teachers to create their own assessments and show those results to your evaluator. Is that rigorous, transparent, fair? Are there issues with that? Okay, if you could bring your conversation to a close. And this time around, I'm just looking for one friend to share what was lifted up in your conversation. And Brian's going to grab you the mic. So just one friend to share what was lifted up in your conversation.
Okay, wait.
Essentially, we decided that the answers to those depends on the teacher, depends on the assessment. They're all over the place with it. You know, some of our best teachers are the hardest on themselves, and others just, you know, what's the easiest way for me to get this done and check the box? So we couldn't answer across the board.
Thanks.
So not easy. Anybody else have anything else to share? I just want to make sure that those who have something to share do have an opportunity to do so. Awesome. Great.
So we did this process in our district. We used the MDE SLO template. Our union grieved it. It was too much work for them to have to continue to create their own tests and give them. And yet part of that where we were using, because it had to be approved, that it was a valid, rigorous assessment, and that was unfair in their opinion. So we were unable to do that. But we were also trying to use that as a piece to see where do we need to go as a district in creating rigorous, fair, valid assessments to judge our student growth. And so we did this, and no one liked it.
So it's different on the context, right? This is why we say no one size doesn't fit all. I would say in my life prior to coming to Oakland schools, so we kind of did a version of this, although not individually, but across disciplines and teacher teams. So we created our own system of common assessment, created benchmarks and thresholds to say, you know what, if there's quality teaching, students should be at about here. And honestly, we had a policy, and not everyone liked this, of redoing and reassessing, so students had multiple opportunities to succeed over a course of time. So it was almost like a no-brainer. Like you, there was almost no choice but to be successful over time. But again, very contextualized to the space where those folks are. Okay, let's do another one. We're going to turn and talk for just a minute or two. This is going to sound familiar. Let's hold teachers accountable for 1.5 years worth of growth on a nationally normed assessment. I hear this all the time. Is that rigorous, transparent, or fair? Turn and talk. Let's do this in 2 minutes, and then we'll ask a friend to share. Probably have a couple more shares on this one. If you could bring your conversation to a close, that one got you talking. So I'm going to look for two friends to share some insights. Two friends. And there is one friend that if she doesn't say anything, I'm going to force her to speak. She knows who she is. Yes.
One thing that we talked about back here was how can we really be 100% sure that it would be fair to the students? The students come in at all different levels. Isn't it more valuable as a classroom teacher that I can tell at the end of that school year that my kids understand and comprehend the grade level standards and curriculum? Wouldn't it be better if we had like a common end assessment? And we should be using common assessments as it is and within departments, but shouldn't we have like a common end assessment to really tell if our kids were making any growth?
Okay. Other thoughts? You got one up here, Brian?
I got a teacher voice.
Teacher voice.
My union would right away read that, because how can I get 1.5 years of growth when I only have the kids for 8 months? We've had that problem already, so could you hold basically double the amount of growth versus what their actual seat time is at there?
And part of the conversation we had was sometimes that teacher isn't the one that's working with that kid for a year and a half. You're looking at the elementary level, you're talking about, and it's going back to your previous session before, is you have an interventionist. You may have a teacher that's an ineffective teacher, but you got a rock star interventionist. That's the one that actually had that student make the growth, not the teacher, but the teacher's getting credit for it.
We were saying over here that just like bodies of the students, like throughout the year, sometimes they don't grow. Sometimes they grow just a little bit physically, and sometimes they just shoot up. But we think their minds are just in the same way. To expect them to go ahead and get 1.5 years, you might have a smart child. No, you know, not at all. Everything's good. And perhaps maybe 1 year they might shoot up a few points, and the next year shoot up a lot, and maybe appear to be sliding down, but still learn. But they're going to be going up and down too. So to say that 1.5 years worth, it's kind of not fair, because we're all learning in different ways, and the amounts that we're learning is going to be different, depending perhaps on the teacher, depending on a lot of things. So things going on at home.
I think the word that I was focused on was transparency. You know, when you think about assessments that are nationally normed, I don't know what a RIT score is, right? I don't, as a teacher, I don't know how to impact that necessarily. And so when they are normed, and I actually am trying to use that information to move my kids, I don't necessarily know what the target is. I don't necessarily know how to get there. And if I do get scores, it might be by like some voodoo magic, because I don't really know how I impacted that or how I got there. And so if we want to get into this idea of transparency, teachers need to know, like, how can I get a kid from point A to point B? And I need to know where point B is. And something that's nationally normed might not necessarily give me that information.
As a data person, I felt like this was transparent, because there's an input and there's an output. And so, like, from my, like I said, from a data perspective, I appreciate that people don't always think about, like, oh, yeah, risk score is blah, 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 or a percentile. So I just want to say thank you for pushing me on that. And
And again, one of the things I mentioned before, the best, and we're going to play around with a tool that is kind of help pushing some of this thinking, but what is the value that teachers see in the assessment instrument? There are some assessment instruments who are like, oh my God, I love it because it tells me this, and I know how to do this with one individual kids or groups of kids, and they're low in this or really strong in this. So there's some products out there that do that, or some measurement instruments that teachers make themselves that give them an idea forward. And there's some that's a bit tricky, right? And so that transparency part is about, again, if I'm here and I need to be there, how do I get there? And the assessment has got to give me some information to bridge that gap. And if it's too difficult for me to bridge that gap, then we need to think critically about the use of that assessment. So MDE recommended growth models. We're going to get into growth models, and then we're going to experiment with the tool a little bit.
So the previous session before the morning on student growth did talk about student growth percentiles and a couple of different and some different models. We're going to focus a lot more on locally selected assessment data, but we also got to talk about state assessment data too. This is going to be a little bit redundant from that session. So the model that the MDE recommends, or we'll put it this way, the model that most districts across the state are using to measure student growth with state assessment is a model that is used within our accountability system, right? And that is student growth percentiles. So student growth percentiles provide an idea of what's the magnitude of growth, right? How much growth. They provide, it measures, of course, because it's measuring student growth, the change in scores between one time period to the next time period. And they have peer comparison groups, where that students with very, very similar, if not identical, prior MSTEP or PSAT scores are compared against other students with like or identical scores. So your students who are advanced are compared against students, their growth, how much change in scores are compared against students who are also advanced, students who are not proficient, are compared against other students who are not proficient. So this is really moving away from this proficiency mindset, right? That is, when you think of assessment, you think proficiency. Right, and it has been probably the most difficult job to be somebody who provides support around student growth. The most difficult aspect of this is moving people from proficiency mindset and static mindset to growth mindset. Right, it's about measuring impact. It's about measuring changes in scores between one time point to the next and seeing, hey, do we have? Is this growth good? Is this growth something that we need to tweak our practice to be able to get a better result, right? So the way this kind of functionally works is, so you have Susan Smith, right? She achieved a scale score of 1634, 1510 on the most recent MSTEP. Year before that, 1510. Year before that, 1412. So a peer group gets made for students across the state who have 1634, 1510, and 1412 previous state assessment scores, right? Okay, so then a year happens. A year of instruction happens, right? The students are taught for a year, and then the next year's state assessment occurs. So Susan Smith, They had these sets of scores, right? They had a score the next year of 1694, right? A student in the same comparison group had a score of 1712. Another one had 1674. So we measure the change in scores that occur from one time period to the next, right? So, and then this is a way oversimplification, right? Because the calculations to determine this are take up a half page, right, if you're looking at the tech doc. But these changes in scores, this one is 78, this one is 40, this one is 60, These changes in scores are normed. So the norming of these changes in scores determine the student growth percentiles. So the student who scored had to change a score of 78, much, much greater change in scores, they had an SGP of 95. This Sam Smith is right in the middle, so, right? So they had an student growth percentile of 50. The student who had much, much lower change, they still had a score improvement of 40, right? They still grew. But in comparison of all the students who had these identical scores, or very close to identical scores, their growth was much less when compared to other students across the entire state. Does this make sense?
That's one of the better representations.
Oh, thanks. So the Michigan Department of Ed, after getting guidance from a technical advisory committee that included national psychometric experts, including Damian Biedebenner, who invented SGPs, have produced and have available cut scores, basically, for what an average or mean SGP is to determine a rating score of 4, 3, 2, and 1. They allow we need to try to hit easy button. This is so complex. We try to hit the easy button whenever humanly possible. So by putting these cut scores and making score 1-4, it makes it a little bit easier, right, to say, okay, let's combine this at 40%, your Marzano 5D plus results at 60%, to determine a transparent summative rating by combining those two with the legislatively determined weightings. So now if you want to know what your building or what your school district's average or mean SGP is, it is available to a parent currently living in Istanbul. I don't know why they would want to look at it, but they could, right? It's on My School Data and is publicly available information. If you just go to My School Data, go to student assessment, go to growth, pick your ISD district and school, school year, grade, and subject, right? You will get your mean SGP for your school, for your building. You can also click on this link now that you have the electronic version of this PowerPoint. Now, that provides you with what the school or what the district mean SGP is. But the legislation within 380-1248, the tenure law, says that, hey, if you're going to use this information for tenure or hiring, firing decision, this has got to be individually attributable, right? So individually attributable data is available. We've developed a student growth calculator tool. MDE does not have access to any teacher rosters in the state, right? We don't have access to your student information systems. There's TSDL, but that's only for a very, very small segment of populations. Not useful for this. So we developed a tool to try to get around that, right, where you copy and paste the MSTEP data files, PSAT data files, into this, right, and then copy and paste the unique identifier codes, the UICs, for the students that the teacher taught as teacher record, right, and then select whether they taught ELA or math, and then it automatically calculates a three-year aggregate, right, a three-year, combines them, the scores over a three-year period of time into a three-year mean score or average score, and then that's compared against those cut scores that I just showed you in the previous slides to determine a 1, 2, 3, or 4. So it's 14 steps that do require copy and pasting. You can develop a template for your whole district to make things a lot easier for you. So then it's just replacing the UICs. But it can be a little bit, it requires copy and pasting, for crying out loud. That's a lot for a lot of people. So we've worked with vendors to replicate this tool and make it available within two or three clicks. So we were Illuminate, Munetrics, IDEX, and our school data house out of Kent ISD too. Have replicated this tool within the reporting suites, and if you have already pre-existed, I'm hoping the use of this tool is a fidelity check of the calculations that are determined for those vendors, because we want to save educators as much time as we possibly can. So these are replicated within this tools. So it's complicated. It's not necessarily easy. But if you go through these 14 steps, you have a MDE endorsed procedure for determining a rating with MSTEP. Now you have to use multiple measures. You have to use LEA selected assessments as well. But at least there's a procedure that you can get a rating score from using those set of procedures. So I think we are going to run this.
Virginia students, parents, and educators may be hearing a new term used in their schools. Student growth percentile.
Virginia has
not exactly something you'd hear in everyday conversation. Let's see if we can explain. In simplest terms, a student growth percentile expresses the progress a student has made relative to the progress of students with similar achievement on previous reading and mathematics standards of learning tests. So how does it all work? Let's take a look. Students have scores from previous standards of learning tests, which are measures at a single point in time. Students across the Commonwealth are grouped based on these scores. Take this group of students who earned a score of 412 on their third grade SOL math tests. Cute, aren't they? When these students become fourth graders and take their fourth grade SOLs, they'll earn new scores. Comparing these scores, it's possible to determine the amount of growth each student in this group has achieved. Let's take a closer look. Student A demonstrated higher growth than 92% of students with a similar score history across the state. Student D demonstrated low growth, but still showed more growth than 15% of students in this group. These percentages are student growth percentiles. Based on their student growth percentile, you'll be able to determine if students are demonstrating low, moderate, or high growth. Pretty simple, right? Many students will receive student growth percentiles in reading and mathematics. The student growth percentile provides students, parents, and educators with a measure indicating the amount of growth a student has made from one year to the next. To find out more about student growth percentiles, visit the Virginia Department of Education's website.
Don't go to Virginia.
Don't go to Virginia. Go to our website. Oops. Okay. Okay, now, so that's student growth percentiles. Oops, that's student growth percentiles. Now, we do right now have another model that we have available to us to measure. Oh, I'm sorry, there's a question.
Go off of student growth percentiles. Yeah. Okay, so you said earlier that the student growth percentile for fifth, eighth, and 11th for science can't be calculated because of the three-year gap, right? Or it would open litigation to use that type of scoring. So how is that not the same as an 8th grade MSTEP score to an 11th grade SAT score being calculated?
Oh, I'm sorry. If I didn't say this, I should have, and I obviously didn't. We also don't recommend the use of 11th grade MSTEP scores.
So how though then, your high school built school index score for growth is calculated off of those 11th grade SGP. So how is that different? Because when I go into I've been researching this because if we have an alternative high school, in one year my growth score was based off of 6 kids, and the next year it was based off of 4 kids. And when I contacted MDE, I was told because though 40 of them had valid 8th grade MSTEP, only 20 of them, let's say, had taken the SAT as well. And they told me that even if they're off track, so like let's say my 8th grader tests as an 8th grader, they're going to an alternative school, they get off track, and so they don't take the 11th grade SAT until technically their 12th grade cohort year, right? So they're considered off track, so an SGP is not calculated. So what was explained to me is that since those couldn't be calculated because they were off track, that's why I only had 6 kids that went into my growth index score on my school index. So that's my question, like how can I have my index score in be a label for my school, potentially for growth, being calculated off of an 8th grade to an 11th grade score.
I'm going to guess what's in your head a little bit here, and given our time, the purpose of this, our discussion, our learning here today, is about like educator evaluation, like of a person and an individual.
Right.
Ooh.
So it is going into our evaluation.
Ooh. Now, I'm not going to guess what Brian's going to say next.
You can go on. Yeah.
Let's talk after the session, though. Okay. Because in order to give me I'm trying to formulate a response that would be in 2 minutes or less.
Sure.
And I'm not sure whether I could give you one.
Okay.
So let's talk offline. After the session, okay? So that's obviously a good question if I have to talk to you afterwards about it. So, and to touch on this, we have a recommendation out on our FAQ and in other places that if you have less than 20 SGP scores, not students, right, scores. So if you taught ELA and math and you test in consecutive years, right, then the psychometric validity, the technical adequacy does take a hit with less than 20 scores. That's what our technical advisory committee told us, right? And so we have a message that pops up if you have less than 20 SGP scores. It says, hey, you'll have less than 20. Consider other assessments. Although I will say, if the reason why you're not picking SGPs is because you have 18 SGPs and your validity and reliability just took a hit, what is the reliability and validity of the alternative measure that you're using in its place? But it is important to know that the psychometric, the technical adequacy does take a hit when you get to below 20. Okay. So the state assessment, there is another model available for measuring student growth with state assessment. It's a value-added model called EVAS. I only put one slide in it because there are 188 districts that have opted in that have teacher-level student growth data available to them. But it is important to note that the funding that's been used to provide EVAS reports to districts has been vetoed, right? And so what is that going to do for the continue? I don't know. I actually really don't know. And that contract is due up, is set to end in March. But they just sent out emails to districts across the state today that those reports are available. But it's at least worth noting that is available out there right now for districts.
All right. So we've told you some stuff, and we've kind of frowned on some of the stuff you said, like, oh, don't use that. So what can we use for educator value? What can you actually do? How many of you are familiar with Rick Stiggins, and how many of you have the book Defensible Educator Evaluation? Yay. If you don't have that book, and if you are a person who is involved in educator evaluation, I would highly recommend buying the book. And a full disclaimer, state assessment isn't Rick's favorite thing, but overall, it's a good book. One common thing I know you've heard across many sessions is that we have to balance standardized test data with high quality interim benchmark and day-to-day classroom assessments. That there has to be a balance. You just can't, you know, SGP, and this isn't legal, but hey, SGP is just the measure, and then that's it, right? There has to be a balance to that system. So one of the neat tools that Brian has created is almost like an auditing tool, an assessment inventory tool. That you can use with teams of teachers. I would do this at a building level or a team level of a discipline or content area to lift up, well, just what do you have? What's the current state of your assessment system in order to drive and inform a discussion about what you might use? It would be inappropriate, I think, to just provide a list of tests and say, hey, use this stuff, without first going through the intellectual enterprise with people about what do we have, what's useful, and what's a rigorous, fair, and transparent measurement instrument we can use. So I've actually given you a copy of that, and we still have a bit of time. I want you to wrestle with that a little bit. We'll skip the computer. So I'll talk about this briefly, but I'm going to actually ask you to fill this out. Don't worry about finishing it. But the reflection point I'm going to ask you in a moment is, how did this push your thinking? Or how might it push the thinking of some of your teachers? So in this inventory, pretty simple at first, is asking, what's the name of it? Sometimes, like when you have newer staff, I don't know, what do we do around here? Dibbles, FMP, FAQ, I don't know, what do we do? So give it a name. What's the entity requiring it? And for this purpose, I don't want you to think about the state requiring. I want you to think about your district or your school. What's a grade level assess? The course, the subject, the reason for the assessment. That's a good one. Do teachers know the reason that this assessment is given? What purpose? What type of it is? What is it aligned to? Is it what standards or skills it aligned to? Here's the gold of this. And again, it's a process. I do this in a live meeting session. Teacher determine usefulness for informing instruction. And this is a sort of norming. This isn't hard balls and strikes. It's just what are our perceptions? From one not useful to five very useful. And then what might we say about the overall quality of that assessment? So what I'd like you to do now for the next 5 minutes is think about at your building or one of the buildings in which you serve or service, one assessment. And I'd like you to try to take a stab at filling out the row. And I'd actually like you to do that now. We'll spend 5 minutes here, and then I'm going to ask you to reflect on that experience. If you are in the same school with the person, I'm going to ask you to work with somebody, because I know we ran out of copies, unfortunately. Oh, awesome. Thank you. Would anyone like one? This kind sir was very kind enough to... My main man, Joe. Thank you, Joe.
We have districts, district teams that complete these together in our workshops. And it's pretty much always yields some really good, productive conversations.
My eyes.
As a music teacher, do I support the reading curriculum? And number one, number two, have it not be more than 50% of their students.
Interest of time, I'm going to move us forward. So again, the cool thing is some of you have accessed that Bit.ly link. I saw some people actually filling out a blank one in Google Sheets. So that tool is free and available for use. By show of hands, how many of you have taken your staff through, or some staff through, an assessment inventory? Yay, awesome. I think in order to inform a really good conversation, one in which the union will fully endorse in your local, going through an exercise like this is super, super critical. So I'm just going to ask a couple friends to share out, how did this push your thinking about assessment in your district, and how might it help your teachers and school leaders understand their assessment systems? And I'm going to ask for two friends to share out.
So we did this in our district at the beginning of last year, and it was sort of our entry into building a culture of data and under digging into data. And the first time we went through it, there was a lot of pushback, like what are the assessments are we going to put in here? Do we have to put every single assessment? We asked all of our subject area coordinators to take it back to their teams. And there was a lot of misinformation of what assessment. It helped us to really realize that what we had made an assumption of, that what an assessment is and why we use it, needed a lot of work because of staff changing. For whatever reason, we just needed to revisit it. So it helped us to actually map out where we were going to start with this work. A year and a half later, when I brought up common assessments last fall, I got a ton of pushback from our secondary staff because of where we were in our district. This year, they're the ones asking me, you know, should we have common assessments? So we have, you know, measures to look at for students across all disciplines. So it this was sort of a catalyst for that.
Thanks for sharing that.
Any other people? And again, I'm curious to people who have done this with staff, yeah, or something like it.
So we did something like this, and I think for us too, for district level, it was a little eye-opening on that, like the relevance, because I think sometimes we just keep going through the motions and keep doing what we're doing and not realizing, or we only hear from loud voices. So we were hearing like complaints about certain assessments, but then when we asked the system to go through and rate, it was completely different than the four or five loud voices we were hearing about. We need to get rid of this.
Gotcha. And Joe?
Kind of echoing what was said, but it really opens up a door. We did this as well. I had a lot of smarter people in the room than me to help me. Ellen Vorenkamp was a big part of our work, and that really allowed the assessment literacy to help teachers understand that assessments are different things and assessments don't mean tests, and that whole mindset gets it going, because it's surprising how little teachers really understand about tests versus assessments and what they can do. If you can start those conversations, then you don't get the pushback on the common assessments, to echo what was said in the back of the room, so just endorsing it as well.
Okay. Thanks for sharing.
Shameless plug for assessment literacy. Would you believe that? Beyond 5 or so years ago, there were no assessment literacy standards for teacher prep institutions. It was not a required part of becoming a teacher. So if you have any teachers who have been teaching longer than 5 or 7 or so years, they haven't had that learning in their teacher prep program. It's just now starting to get its way into graduate programs and undergraduate, like just now. And look at how much of a core part of teachers' work is interacting with, administrating, making sense, and acting upon assessment data. So we got a knowledge and skill gap, an assessment inventory, because I've done like, hey, workshops on assessment literacy, people don't come to those. But doing at the building level, hey, we're going to take part of a PD day and complete an assessment inventory, does allow you the opportunity to promote assessment literacy within that context. All right, awesome. So we just want to show a couple real examples. Brian will show one, I'll show one, and then we're out of here.
Yeah, so these are, there is a lot of good examples across the state. So we're just highlighting a couple now, right now, with the limited time that we have. Realize there's other districts who are also doing some outstanding work for measuring student growth in ways that facilitate continuous improvement. But one district that I wanted to highlight was Battle Creek Public Schools. And not only have they developed a really great set of practices that are transparent, rigorous, and fair, they've also made available guidance documents that I think are useful not only for Battle Creek educators, but they're accessible for to look at exemplar work, and to look at, hey, what are some other districts doing? They developed a rubric that provides, hey, what is, for our teachers who are NEA eligible K-3, here's the data that we're using. There's rigor in here, there's transparency, there's fairness. MSTEP eligible, here's what we're doing for our MSTEP eligible grades and subject areas. And for the other subject areas, here's what we're doing. We're doing SLOs, and here's the criteria we're using to measure student growth with SLOs. I think it's I really love the work that they've done. It was there's people in the room that can speak to this better than I, but I don't want to put them on the spot. But they've done some really great collaborative work and have some really good resources available at that website that other districts I think can look at and maybe learn from for how to really be able to do this well and implement some good practice. So I want to hold this up as a good example. I work for those for districts across the state.
And this is from the Oak Park School District. I take zero credit for this. This is actually done by my data predecessor in that district, and they also so that if you have this presentation, that Oak Park School District text, that's a link, and they have also developed a guidebook with charts, graphs, assessment inventories, assessment calendars. And so what you're looking at is a matrix of student growth component categories and weightings. So reads kind of like this. If I'm a K through 12 general education teacher, at this point it was still in that legislative flux of, what was it, 40% or 25%? So they say, hey, your of your total evaluation rating, 60 or 75% of that is based on the classroom observation. State assessment, you know, the half sort of business we were in with the SGP, NWEA MAP, student growth, they do pre and post tests. And so that comprises the weight if you are a gen ed teacher. But if you are a pre-K teacher, they're looking at core assessments and pre-post because they don't have state assessment. They don't administer NWEA MAP for those grade levels. So a really easy one-pager way for a teacher to understand, well, what counts for what. And I can tell you that the pre-post tests that they are using for the most part are locally developed. So they made them and they tweaked them. There are ranges of quality of that, but I tend to think the beauty is not in the score, it's in the journey. Like the learning journey that we as a staff made in making this assessment and disaggregating the results, particularly item analysis, I always think is a very powerful tool. You can't do item analysis with most large-scale assessment products, so the item analysis becomes a really powerful hinge point in determining what comes next in a student's learning. We don't have time for this necessarily. Well, we got like a minute or two. Yeah. Let's go for it. Let's do it. Before you leave out of the room, we're just asking you to take a moment for yourself to reflect on your own learning and to share with others. What are you taking away from your experience in this session? So pop back into that Slido link and that code. It's a different sort of setup in there now. What are you taking away from this session? And let's make that our exit ticket, but if we got a minute or two, we can talk about what we see there. So same as fact that I'll take a little liberty and kind of answer one, because our lobbyists at Oakland Schools are trying to gather other lobbyists in this sort of position. Generally speaking, what some of the education lobby is trying to do with Lansing is advocate against the use of line item budget things like, hey, this favorite tool, you get money for this for like Algebra Nation, and you get money for IDEX and Munitrix, and you get money for EVAS particularly. They're trying to do away with that and instead just give you more money so that you have the flexibility to do with your dollars what you need. So instead of giving you, you know, based on your student count, $10,000 just for this one thing, we want to give you $15,000, and you make the determination of what you want to do with those resources. Very generally speaking. So although the EVAS was vetoed in the budget, the governor has recommended a significant increase, a more significant increase in school funding than the loss of the EVAS funding.
Okay. I wanted to mention Mitch's name, but I also didn't want to put him on the spot. Thanks,
Mitch is the man. Mitch is the man. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we appreciate you so much for spending time with us. Hopefully, this gives you some ideas to take back to the ranch that you've seen here. Go forth and conquer. Have a great rest of your conference. Yeah. Right. Good to see you.